Okay, let's go.
This is what should be done by one who is feeling goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties,
and frugal in their ways,
peaceful and calm and wise
and skillful,
not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay.
Let me just sit, please.
Oh.
Unless you want to use it.
Okay, so. So I've got to talk now, right? Yes. What should I say? Anyways, so yeah, we all come here to meditate. I've seen very familiar faces. Yeah. And I'm sure you've heard the teachings over and over again. But it's just nice to reflect on just the ability to just give yourself some time to just sit and just have a break from the world. It's a nice gift that you can give to yourself. And just reflecting today, when I was meditating, I didn't really have anything to do in the afternoon. So there was just free time. And it's like you've been in the monastery for so long, you see the same trees, kind of boring. you cleaned your room like 5 times that day already, so there's nothing else to be cleaned. Actually, my room's still a bit dirty. You've been in the meditation hall, it all looks the same, the hills, the scenery, and it sort of like gets to a point where you're not really like interested in anything, and you have nothing to do. And that's sometimes we get ourselves into that situation in life. How many things can you do in a day? And you probably start to realize that you probably do the same things. You do the same thing on the weekend, you do the same thing at work, and it gets to a point where all the things that you can do has been exhausted. So what you have left is a little bit of free time. So what do you do with that free time? I go on Facebook. Send some emails. And you know, when we find ourselves as people or even monastics, when you have those times in your day where you have nothing to do, maybe spend some of that time just meditating. And it's sort of like, in a sense, when you have exhausted all the things that you can do during that day, your mind has nothing to do and nothing to think about. So when it comes to like sitting, that kind of momentum carries over. So when you sit, the mind is quiet, the mind is peaceful. And that doesn't really take, I think, that much work in order to reach that state of like peace and quietness. I always say the same thing. And you still come back to listen to me. Oh my gosh. And I always say, like, you know, in order to like be able to like experience a little bit of peace, a little bit of stillness, one has to like just put time into the practice. And it's sort of like, you know, whatever you focus on in life, that grows. You can just sort of see that in your everyday life. If you have some sort of stress or some sort of problem, when you focus on that, you know, that stress becomes bigger and more problematic, and you end up getting paranoid. Or, you know, when you focus like on the things that you like to do, I don't know, some of you may like to cook, a bit of carpentry, read up on politics. Any of you going to the shopping centers and buying all the tissues and toilet papers off the shelf? But those things, when you have time and you have focus, you can actually create something nice if you're like a carpenter or a cook. And also if you start to focus on this like coronavirus, you just end up going to the shops and just stocking up with toilet paper and what's it, Dettol? Dettol and hand cleaner. So whatever you like focus on in life, whatever you pay attention to, that will grow. Yeah? It's like you can all know, you all sort of know that, like, when you get a little bit of anger sort of like arises in your heart, and then you just focus on it a little bit. It's not there so much, but because that person said something, your mind goes back to that anger, and it gets a little bit bigger, and it gets a little bit bigger, to the point where, you know, it's completely like out of control. So this like focus and paying attention to something helps you develop the mind in the direction where the mind is paying attention to. So the more you pay attention to like the anger, the more stronger it will become. The more attention you pay to like fear of getting sick, then you just act accordingly. But it doesn't matter if you get sick here, right? We're at a hospital. And the same goes to when it comes to like putting attention onto the meditation practice. The more we can just focus our energies, our time, just giving ourselves that opportunity to meditate, that will give you that will allow like peace and stillness to arise. Yeah, it's sort of like how can you ever get, like, it's just sort of like, you know, if you want money in this world, you have to go and work, you got to put in the hours, and then you get something. There's like a cause and effect. You have to do something to achieve something. And in the same way, you know, with peace and stillness, you actually have to put some sort of effort into it to get some peace and to get some stillness. But it's like, how do we do it? It's like, what is the secret? And I'm pretty sure if you meditated for many years or many times, you know what peace and stillness is all about. Otherwise, you wouldn't be coming back here. Or otherwise, you wouldn't be meditating. But I think one of the most like important things is that you can take into your meditation practice is the way you sort of relate to it. Yeah? Like, are you relaxed? Are you chilled when you're meditating? You know, do you have the attitude of whatever happens, happens, is not a big deal? Yeah? It's just looking at it as... Yeah?
What about grief and the grieving process? Do you, when grief is raw and sudden,
yeah,
do you take time out sooner or later? Or
I think it's like, you know, as monks, we one of our jobs is to just observe the things that happen in our mind. And what we can understand is like grief and it's just like an emotion, because you've like lost somebody, and it just really depends on how close you are to that person determines you know, how much suffering you're gonna have. And in a sense, as you know, Buddhists, we come to understand that sometimes these feelings are so strong, we can't really do anything about it. We can't say to ourselves, oh, I want this to go away, or, you know, why me, or you take medication or talk to your friends or even meditate to get rid of this grief, but because it's so strong, it just stays there. So I think it is true when they say time will heal all wounds. So sometimes you can't really do anything but just let the grief sort of like dissolve all by itself. But I think in the meantime, you know, you can control what you do in your daily life. Like, you can control who you spend your time with. Are you spending time with friends that just give you that momentary happiness? You can laugh a bit, you know, enjoy the food that you're eating. Just anything to basically help you forget about that grief. And then over time, I think the strength of that grief will eventually, you know, disappear. Yeah. Because, you know, I lost my dad, and my mom lost her husband, my grandma lost her husband, and they all went through the grieving process. Some of us grieve more than others, but eventually they get over it. Yeah. And that's how you can meditate as well. just be patient. Yeah. Be patient and just sit down and just watch the mind and see what the mind shows you. Cuz this mind can show you anything and everything. It's got more TV channels than the internet. Like, it's got more channels than YouTube. It can show you the good stuff, it can show you the bad stuff. And when you sit long enough, it's not how long you sit, but when you sit and give opportunity for your mind to show you what this meditation can give you, then it's sort of like the mind, what it shows you is that it can give you like a bit of peace, a bit of stillness, clarity. One thing that I find with the meditation practice is that it gives you like a break from life. Yeah, you know, some people talk about, oh, let's go on holiday to like Bali or something like that, to just get away from life. And then when they go on holiday, they eat a lot of food and they get their massages and they go and swim and all that kind of stuff. They have a great time when they come back. Yay! That was amazing, they tell all their friends. And then why is that? It's because they just got away. Sometimes you just need to get away from the things happening in life. And they feel good for that. And I think the meditation practice offers you that escape with no budget. So you don't need to get on a plane. Or you don't need to drive 500 Ks to Margaret River or somewhere to get away from things. You can get away from things when you're sitting in a chair and meditating. just being able to get away. I think that's one of the, you know, the best gifts that you can give yourself. And that's all, I think that's all, like, that's one benefit that you get, like, from the meditation practice. And the other benefit that you get from the practice is also, like, how would you, like, the momentum of, like, peace and stillness, it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger within your mind. And what that does is it sort of, like, allows you to find a place when you're meditating, which is quiet and peaceful, in a quicker way. Whereas, you know, when you first start to meditate, you're like fidgeting, going this way, you're going that way, your mind's thinking about this and it's thinking about that, it hasn't settled down, 10 minutes has gone past and you're sleeping, you thought about your essay and what you're going to eat tomorrow, and you're like, oh, this doesn't work. I'm going to quit. But that's what happens when you first meditate. The first couple of months, couple of weeks, couple of years even. But then you get to a point where you sort of get it, right? And then when you close your eyes, your mind just quickly finds itself back in that peace and stillness. And that's when you're really going on holiday. Just being able to give yourself a break from anything and everything. And, huh?
So then, are you so well practiced that when you start to meditate that no outside thoughts go through your mind?
I'm not like saying like I'm a genius meditator or anything like, or like, but you notice over the years, yeah, the peace and the stillness actually becomes it's not like stronger, but it's more available to you. It's like, you know, like it's like looking for a rare plant, right? And it's very hard to find these rare plants. You know, you're searching online. Sometimes I do that. It's like, a rare succulent. I like succulents, right? A rare succulent. So you're searching online and whatever's going on, this one, or it like costs a lot of money and blah, 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 blah. But they're rare, but you can find them. And that's something, that's sort of like, you know, when you're meditating, the peace and stillness is something of a rare thing that doesn't really come up from time to time. But when you go to places where these plants aren't rare anymore, you can just go to a Bunnings and pick it up for like $6 instead of spending like $35 for them. So this rarity, like the peace in the mind, over time it sort of changes and becomes something which is more common and easily found. So when you're meditating, it's sort of, yeah, your mind might sway left or sway right, thinking about this, thinking about that, but it can always become grounded quite easily. Yeah, and quite quickly. Because I think, you know, it's like, anger is an emotion that we all know. Being passionate about something, we know that. Or laughter, happiness, sadness, you know, there's something that we know. And I think peace is, and stillness is also one of those emotions that you can get to know. For a lot of us, it's something which is elusive and rare, like those succulents that I look online for. but then after a while, these like the peace and stillness becomes like commonplace emotions, like the anger or the happiness that you may feel from time to time, or the anger or the happiness that you like to access from time to time. And that peace and stillness is something there. And you don't really need to like sit meditation to experience it. You can experience it throughout your day. You may be busy, you know, doing your work and all that kind of stuff, but there's moments where you're just walking down the street, yeah, waiting for something. And those moments, I think you can sort of like just let go of everything and just allow the, you know, the stillness, the presence of mind, t- to be there. And I think that's what, like, if you can understand that, that's sort of like pointing your mind in the direction of like peace and stillness. But it all takes. What does it take? You have to shave your head. Shave your hair off. Shave your hair off. Become a monk. It just takes a bit of practice. Yeah. That's all it is. Just like a bit of practice. And I think with anything, you know, you need a bit of like a reward when you're practicing. Yeah. It's like when you're meditating for like 5-10 minutes, just try to look for the reward in the meditation practice. That little bit of stillness, that little bit of being in the present moment. That's the award that you get when you practice, that makes you come back and do the meditation more. Because, you know, why would you want to, it's like, would you eat food that you don't like twice? No. So why would you meditate again if you can't find like the little bit of pleasure in that meditation? So I think like when you're meditating, it's just like be a little bit mindful and watchful for whatever is happening. And then that mindfulness is, I think it's like everybody has a mindfulness which is wise enough to understand what stillness and peace is. And all you're doing is just collecting information. And that information, you can sort of reproduce it and make it an experience in the meditation practice. So instead of like searching for the peace and stillness, you can actually go to it and find it easily. Yeah, so that's all it is. It's like marinating olives. Remember marinating olives? Oh my gosh. Like corny chef analogies. Marinating olives. Never mind, I won't talk about that. Maybe next time. All right. Everybody's tired because I've been talking for too long. All right, cool. You can start. So you just allow your mind, to be. No need to do anything really. So you just You close your eyes when you meditate. And you're usually when we close our eyes, we go to sleep. But we're not doing that now. We're closing our eyes and watching with our minds what is going on. There's that like watchful knowing quality that we engage in when we're meditating. We're not completely shutting everything off. Most things off, but we keep the mind awake. We keep it awake to the point where we just know the things which is going on around us. We know that we're sitting in a room. We know that we're sitting on a chair. We know that everything is becoming dark and quiet. So we start to know the quietness of this room. We start to notice inactive activity that we're doing now. This is a, you can say to yourself, the first time, probably for today, that you've given yourself a chance to forget about the world. you're meditating, you're not just learning how to accept everything that's happening. It's a time where you don't fight. It's a time where you're not doing anything. It's a time to just free yourself. Free yourself to the moment. So whether your mind is tired or whether you think that this is boring or whether you think that this is a wonderful guided meditation, whether you're sleepy or whether your mind's super active, just relax, be with it, and just have, like, just trust in the process, knowing that if you wait long enough, if you watch carefully, then you'll start to see the stillness and peace which lies within each of our own minds. Okay, so in the few moments I'm going to ring the bell. And ringing the bell just indicates that the meditation has come to an end, and then you can open your eyes. So, comments, questions, complaints? Are you awake yet? I can't see. Is everything foggy? Yes?
Hindrances.
Oh my. I forgot what they are.
Just for the new people.
How many new people here? Three. Oh, you're here. Welcome. Enjoy it? Look, are you local?
Yes.
Armidale?
Mount
Sorrel. Nice. You have a nice big property or something small and...
I have a rock actually that I do sit on to meditate.
Oh, you have a rock.
Yeah. Space for that, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay,
I find it difficult.
Yeah. Have you been meditating for long?
On and off, I think, for the last 12 months, but...
Yeah. Who else finds it difficult to meditate? Hands up. Oh my gosh. Everybody. So you're sort of like going through like the same experience as everybody else.
Get that peace. I do get that peace when I do that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think, like once you notice that peace, then you can always go back to it. And I think I was just meditating and I was just reflecting on how I was meditating, and sometimes our minds are. Not quite in the moment, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like it's smeared, like to the past or to the future, and it's not quite there. So all you need is just a little bit of like tweaking for the mind to be more present, and then when that happens, you can just see like a shift in your meditation practice.
Could you talk something about how to cope with the despondency in the world at the moment? Because there seems so much fear about toilet paper and coronavirus and...
Don't watch the news.
Yeah, okay.
Or listen to the radio or talk to your friends.
And don't go to Woolworths. It's no toilet paper.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it's just kind of interesting, you know, when you see, like when you... when you see people read the news and their reactions to what is, whatever's happening, and then you can start to see that their mind's like sort of like spiraling out of control. And then if one person's doing it and another person's doing it, and we're sort of like, it's a collective like energy that people get involved with, and they end up going buying toilet paper and stuff like that. So so yeah, sometimes, like, you know, when as monks, when we see our fellow monastics just get caught up in these things, we just say, don't watch the news. Because that's what's happening, is because whatever you're listening to, whatever you're reading, is somehow influencing your mind. Yeah. Even though you don't think it is, but it actually is, when you see how you're acting and how other people are acting when it comes to things like that. So yeah, sometimes we just need to exercise a bit of like common sense when it comes to things like that. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's sort of reached Queensland, but it hasn't come to Perth yet, kind of thing. And what did they say? I was talking to a nurse today, and she was saying that maybe 3 to 6 months, that's when the coronavirus may make it to Perth. So people are panicking a little bit. And because there's no cure or anything like that, that's why it's a bit of a worry. But, you know, why worry about something that you don't have, and just enjoy the moment for what it is? You know what I mean? Yeah, sometimes we forget that. It's like life still goes on. You know, the sun still comes up. It's autumn now. It's beautiful. You can sort of like go outside and just enjoy the day for what it is. Because, like, you know, just looking at my own mind, like, it doesn't really depend, it doesn't really matter on you know, your external situations. Your mind plays a huge part, in a way, in how you interact with the world around you. If you're having a bad day, then everything and anything you look is bad, right? You might hear your favorite song, but you're having a bad day, it's like, you hate it. But then when you're having a good day, you know, it could be raining, somebody called you like something not very nice, you get served cold food as a monk. But because you're having because you're having a good day, it doesn't really matter. I think it's not, if you look at it carefully, it's not the world around you that determines whether you're going to have a good or bad day. It's the world within you that determines whether your bad day is going to be good or not. And that's something as human beings we can sort of see within our own minds. How can, you know, it's like I have a little rose garden, right, at the monastery. And it's like, how come when I walk past the rose garden, sometimes I feel good, sometimes I feel bad? It's not the roses look the same. Pink, purple, green, blue. They're the same, but it's my mind, which is different. And then sometimes we, like, you know, okay, the mind is like this. So we understand that, okay, our mind, sometimes we have, like, bad moods. You can't really do nothing much about it. You're not going to enjoy, like, you're not going to enjoy today. But that's it. So you just deal with it. You know, as a Buddhist, you don't complain, or because complaining makes it worse, and you just sort of like suck it in. But when you have a good day, when you walk past those roses, you should come see the rose garden. It's awesome, and then you can enjoy it, and just understand that, hey, you know, some days are gonna be like this. So in a sense, just make the most of it. Yeah, just pause and understand that, you know, the happinesses and the like the unhappinesses in life is like impermanent. They're not always there. They come and go. So when the times are tough, you just toughen up. But when the times are going well, you just enjoy the day for what it is. I think that's very true, yeah. Because I walk around and like, huh, yep.
One of my thoughts is always really negative.
Oh,
and I always tell them, you know, be a bit happy. Just turn all the negatives into positives. And he's trying to learn. And the other day I asked him how you feel. He goes, I feel content. I don't think I'm tired. Well, that's a really good word for him to say, content, because that's all we want, don't we? To be content.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, he must have learned something.
From who?
I don't know.
How old's your son?
32.
He's not your son anymore, is he? No, he's 2, I'm sorry, sorry. He's a man. How come he's negative?
I think because he hasn't got a girlfriend, he lost his life, and he's a dad. He's got a pretty sad life at the moment, yes.
Is he always like this, or since he was young? Yeah.
Not when he was very young, but then when he became a teenager, yes, he became like that. And I think he had that all from his dad.
Yeah, but yeah, it's kind of a difficult one to, I think it's just a difficult one to accept, because we get taught like with Buddhism and like mental health and all the sciences and education out there that you can sort of change your mind, you can become like a negative person and then become a positive person. But the reality of the matter is that you know, people are people to a certain extent. However much education, meditation or medication they take, they're still going to be somewhat the same. Yeah. And with these like improvements of becoming a more like positive person and becoming more content, you know, these things they just take time. And also I think it also when the individual starts to like understand that there's something going on, then they will do something to change it. It's like I think each that's the interesting thing about, if you hear stories about why like people become monastics, like why I became a monk, you have other people coming here teaching, you go to the nuns' monastery and the nuns will tell you their story. But I think what happens is they have some sort of like insight or understanding to their own mind, and they know something is like something crap, yeah. Something's not right, right? Yeah, they know something mentally is not right, so they're willing to make a change. And for some reason, they found like connection, like with Buddhism and meditation, and obviously because through the teachings of Ajahn Brahm, we sort of like know that something's up, so we want to make a change. So that's why we, as monastics, we dedicate our lives to this practice. And I think like for anybody out there, you know, listening, or that's what you need to know, is you need to know that there's something wrong, or something not wrong, but something not right happening, so you actually put an effort into making a change. Yeah. And that's something, like if your son can sort of realize that, then he'll make the change. Yeah. Because you hear like some amazing, you don't hear amazing stories as a monk, but you witness amazing stories as a monk. There's a big difference there. You see people just coming in, and before they step foot into a monastery, they're doing terrible things, you know. And but they knew that there's something was going on, and just making that change and just like learning how to meditate. Learning how to meditate and just change our minds slowly. They understood that the meditation and monastic life offered that kind of lifestyle, so they were able to sort of give up what they were doing before. Like, you know, some people do terrible. Some months, previous months, they've done like terrible things, but they just had that insight. Yeah. And you see, like, they just transform from, you know, nothing into something, and then from something into nothing again. If you know what I mean. That's very, like, very Zen, isn't it? From something into nothing. From nothing into something, and then from something into nothing.
Because you love the world.
Huh?
You've got to love the world.
You got to love the world, yes. Because at the end of the day, right, you, all you like, seasoned Buddhists know that we're aiming for nothingness. And I always tell people, right? Like, sometimes, you know, we try to create a healthier sense of self. Yes. And how do you do that? By loving the world. Yes.
You mentioned earlier about thoughts that come into our head, and they get bigger.
Yeah.
They get bigger with us and take our thinking over. What's your advice on, like, how we get stuck into following our mind when it gets angry or sad or emotions? Well, it's okay moments to think, oh, I'm not good. How can we develop that sense of being able to be that mindfulness and being able to pull ourselves up and get ourselves back on a better, more positive path?
Are you talking about just like in the meditation practice or
just general day?
I think it just like came to my mind is there's one thing that monastic learn is like we do this walking meditation. So basically we're just like just walking up and down and just being mindful of like the movements in the body. And so like, you know, when you find yourself just getting lost in like negativity or whatever, getting angry, or I think like you just stop what you're doing and do something else. Like just go for a little walk, you know what I mean? And just do it mindfully, or just because sometimes when we're doing a certain activity, we sort of get caught in that emotion, and as we continue doing whatever we're doing, the emotion sort of starts getting stronger. So we need to like break it, you know what I mean? So just break it, just drop everything that you're doing, take a deep breath, maybe just go for a walk, or maybe stretch. And that allows your mind to just focus on something else. And hopefully that will just give you like a little bit of pause in whatever's happening, and then you just go back to what you're doing. And you know, the anger maybe still be there, but at least you know how to sort of pause it for a little while and give yourself a break from it. Yeah, I think that's important, because as like I can sort of relate to you, because as meditators, sometimes when we meditate and we just get into a rut, yeah, think about this, what kind of wood should I use? Should I use this paint or should I use that paint? Maybe I should get that miter saw or maybe that planer. Nails or screws? You know, the mind just gets, sorry. So that's what happening, you know, the mind just goes, and then it's like you just have to stop meditating, right? Get up, do something, and then go back to your meditation. And that's sort of the same. We get caught up in these emotions or whatever, or ruts in just everyday life. And if we just stop that activity and just take a break, I think that would help. Yeah. So, screws, paint. I like to build, so, you know. What is it? Books. No, don't worry. What am I? Computer. Books, research. I'm a nerd. What am I? No, yes.
Would you be willing to share your life, how you've come to this point?
Okay. Okay. So I've been a monk for 15 years. Yeah. And so I'm pretty old now. Yeah, I'm a Perth boy, so family migrated from Vietnam, so they escaped because of, you know, all the troubles, and And since my grandfather, he's a businessman, he got the two boats built, and he was charging people gold bars to get on the boat. Wow. So yeah, it's like a full on story, hey, and so they had to escape, and the only time to escape was on the new moon, so it's like pitch black, and because my family, they were quite famous at the time. And quite wealthy, so the communists, they were just going around and just shutting down all the businesses and taking things over. So my uncle had the idea of escaping Vietnam for a better future. So they had to plan everything. You know, it's not like, okay, I take the bus and I head to Perth kind of thing. So it was like a real escape. So they had to plan a fake marriage. They had to, like, the family had to pretend that they were going to a different city for marriage. So they had to wear all the clothes and all that kind of stuff. Send out invitations and all that kind of stuff. So they were staging something. And then the only time they could escape was in the middle of the night. So, because the Viet Cong was around. So they were, like, watching people and throwing people into prison if they were, like, looking, like, doing something suspicious. And so the first night they got on the boat and the murder didn't start. Oh my gosh. So they had to plan another marriage. No, and then they had to wait another 2 weeks for the moon to sort of cycle over again. And then eventually they got on the boat. So they went in two groups just in case one group sort of perished on the way. But both groups survived. So my mom was pregnant with me on the boat. So I tell everybody I had the most comfortable seat on the boat. So yeah, it was, and then like to Indonesia, and that's where I was born. And yeah, from Indonesia to Perth. So I grew up in Perth, you know, went to a Catholic school. Actually went to church a few times, and I actually became a Catholic boy. So I think a part of me sort of had like this belief in something when I was younger, and then just went through. So I didn't do well at school, so that's why I became a chef.
Cook up a storm.
Yeah, I was a pretty good cook there, you know. And then. I was doing chefing for a while. I actually didn't finish my apprenticeship because like monastic life sort of arose for me, and just being the type of person who I didn't really think about my future, because you know some monks when they come into monastic life they want to finish off their degree so that if they disrobe they can have something to fall back on, but I didn't have those kinds of ideas in my mind. So I got interested in Buddhism because, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
Crap happens, you know. Each and everybody. Yeah. We go through crap in life. Stuff happens. And then, I just luckily found Buddhism through... I was even willing to go to Vietnam to become a monk because my mother at the time, her teacher was from Vietnam. And all I wanted to do was to learn how to meditate, and that's the kind of place where I come from. When it comes to my intention on why I became a monk, is just to work with my mind, because like at a young age I sort of had, you know, I realized that a lot of problems came from my own mind. You're trying to fit in, being young, and all that kind of stuff, and you know, life is not really going your way, you're having a tough time, so I wanted to do something to help myself. Yeah, I didn't want to see a psychologist because I didn't have enough money. No. And yeah, so for some reason I made a connection with meditation, and yeah, it just led me to monastic life.
You should have come here.
Yes, the hospital. Yes.
Have you ever been bored with meditation? Like, you were a chef before. because you must get frustrated sometimes.
Yeah, because I think as a meditator, you're in a sense you're searching for like meditation perfection. Yeah, like, you know, I don't know if you hear about it much here, but they talk about the deeper meditations. Yeah, so in a sense there's a goal when you're meditating. A lot of times, you know, when we're here, we tell you not to aim for anything, but there is a path and a process, like beginning, middle and end when it comes to the meditation practice. So in a sense, yeah, you might get bored, but you always have like something to work towards. So that, I think that quickly like overcomes the boredom. Because if you don't see like any point in doing something, then it starts to become boring and then you end up giving it up. But with the meditation practice, if you do it a lot, like every day, a few hours a day, then yeah, you end up getting bored with it, but that boredom doesn't stop you from continuing to meditate, because you can see that there is an actual goal to get to. Huh?
And
yeah, and that's the goal. I think that's a part of like me continuing on with the practice, is because I have a goal to work towards. If I didn't have that goal, I'm like, you know, what's the point? What's the point, you know? You know what I mean? Yeah. Huh? Okay. Any more questions? Complaints?
Sounds a bit paradoxical to me. You don't want to get attached to something, and then at the same time, when you're meditating, you're trying to achieve something.
That's the funny thing. It's sort of like while you're meditating, in order for yourself to achieve something, you cannot have any attachments. But there is actually something to achieve in the meditation practice, and that it just happens naturally. Yeah, there are stages that you go through, but the only way for you to move on to the next stage is to have no craving or attachments while you're meditating. But outside of the meditation, sometimes you're like, oh, what am I meditating for? I thought, oh yeah, because I want to achieve a bit of peace, maybe a little brightness of the mind. So, and that sort of gives you like the motivation and the intention to go back to the practice. Yeah.
It's almost like a musician trying to get better every day.
Yeah, that's what it is. And you always make the same mistakes. I guess a musician's like that. He's always making the same mistakes. Always at that note, he's missing it or something like that. And the same with the meditators, always making the same mistakes. That's why the path seems kind of slow for us. But then one day we sort of wake up a little bit, and then we just move a little bit further along the path. Yeah. Isn't that right? It always seems the same, doesn't it? Okay.
Thank you, good night. Thank you. 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 Thank you.